All right, I would like to welcome everyone back to the Mountain West Connection show. I'm Jeremy here.
No more theme song for you guys.
Sorry, we will make an appropriate open once I have time. No more Batman. Plus, that could be considered copyright infringement, perhaps, maybe.
It's just not professional enough.
I'm not saying professional, but I would like, I have this, well, not the, whatever. I know how to take care of that stuff to get it sound nicely and stuff. I just got to sit down and spend an hour or two to do it. But Mountain West Connection, MWCConnection.com, at MWCConnection. Our email, if you want to email us, MountainWestFootball@gmail.com. A little bit different there because I've had that email forever when the site was supposed to be just about football, but it still is. That's what we do today. San Jose State football. Are you pumped for Spartans?
I actually am pumped for Spartan football.
Sparty.
And here's my – no, they're not Sparty.
Sorry, I apologize.
They're not Sparty simply because people typically don't have expectations and are usually failed by them. Anyway, continuing. No, the reason why I'm totally stoked for San Jose State football is because they've got a chance to not only just be continuously successful, but also have a chance, despite what David said on the last podcast, to easily finish at the top of the West Division.
Correct. Yeah, we'll get into this with our guest. We are having a suit momentarily. Jimmy Durkin from San Jose Mercury News does all things that, not Aztecs, sorry, Spartans. I don't know where that came. You just mentioned the Aztecs from what David did last week. But he does all things Spartans. Does a great job. We'll get a lot of information from him. We'll ask him about the schedule since it sets up beautifully to win the league, in my opinion, if they can get it done. He got some tougher teams. We'll talk about the Stanford game, which is at Palo Alto again. We'll discuss players to watch, players to know, who we don't know, because it's a new team. I had to do some research, as did Chris, like, oh, their offensive line might be good despite losing a player to the NFL draft. So we'll kind of get into all that stuff. And some other site news we have before we get into Spartan stuff. We do have our list going on, our countdown list. So we're at number 29, and I will mention the name, even though Chris doesn't want to discuss it, is Joe Southwick, Boise State
Swick.
Starting quarterback.
Swick. He's pretty swell, don't you think?
All we're going to say, everybody knows our opinion about what happened before. He's a good quarterback. There's just a lot of good quarterbacks in the league. Let's leave it at that. Fall camp starts this week. As we mentioned with Jimmy, San Jose State starts on Thursday. Utah State starts on Friday. Most everybody's probably starting this week or Monday. Do you know when Boise starts fall camp?
I want to say they start tomorrow.
Tomorrow. They don't have a Thursday night game, do they? The Washington game's on Saturday, so who knows? They may have an extra day off, but everybody starts by the weekend. By Monday, everybody's in full swing, at least with their first practice. So football is here, right? That is.
Yeah, I know. You have no idea how excited I am. Like, I'm sitting there at work, and we're, you know, I'm having lunch with friends, and they all. I've kind of got slight obsession. Also, go buy Bill C's new book.
Yes, Study Hall.
It just came out today, and I just bought my copy on Amazon. That I already found on Amazon. Go buy it. I can't personally guarantee it to be a good read because I haven't read it yet.
I can tell you, I'm still with it. I'm apparently special to get an advanced copy, about a PDF copy a week or so ago. I'm about 100 pages in. It's well worth your money, friends. It's only, what, 13 bucks, 14 bucks?
Yeah, 18 bucks for me, including shipping, so, you know.
Yeah, reasonable. Right now, it's just paperback. It's going to be on digital, some sort of digital form within a few weeks. But who cares? Kill a tree, buy a book for Bill C.
Totally. It's going to be worth it.
And we'll have Bill Connolly on soon to talk about the book, stats, Mountain West. In the book, it does have stuff from Fisher DeBerry in there, which I kind of read about that, which is pretty cool. I'll say one cool thing about it really quick. He mentions, because we all know they run run-based option offense. He's doing something in Texas. He's like, how do we can't get these players to the academy. What do we do? Run something nobody else runs, and that's what they've done and been successful at. That's why the triple option in high school, or not even that, the wishbone, like Oklahoma, that's why they are successful forever, or in Navy, that offense. It's stuff like that where do what nobody else is doing, Georgia Tech, you'll be successful. But this is not the show about Bill C. or Study Hall. College football, it's stats, it's stories. That's the full name of the book there. But we are talking San Jose State football. And yeah, we got our guest coming up in just a second. Jimmy Durkin from the San Jose Mercury News coming up now to discuss all things Spartan football. All right, and now we welcome in our guest for tonight from the San Jose Mercury News. You got Jimmy Durkin, who does all things San Jose Spartans, and we're going to have him on, or he's on right now, to help us get to know more about one of the newest members of the Mountain West. So how are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing good.
Doing good. So yeah, I got just let's kind of jump into it really quick. When they got the announcement to move over, like San Jose State never has been good in football outside of last year. I think they tried to drop football like a decade or 15 years ago or something like that. What do they think the move's going to be? Because we saw what Nevada did last year. We saw it who did okay. Fresno State did better with their new head coach. What do you think the transition is just by the players and competition wise? How do you think that could kind of affect? Because it's an upgrade from the WAC for at least half the teams, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest difference is, you know, the bad teams, quote unquote bad teams in the Mountain West are a lot better than the bad teams were in the WAC. You know, last year the WAC had three, I'd say, pretty good teams. You know, three teams that spent time in the rankings, and they had four teams that you know, just weren't very good at all. And so they, I mean, and they played those four bad teams all in a row right in the middle of the season. So they got a four-week stretch where they were pretty much on a bye. I mean, they got to just go and, you know, they won three of those by 30-plus points, and they just really got to beat up on teams. And then they hit their kind of their home stretch at the end of the year where they had BYU and they had Louisiana Tech, and they were healthy because – they really hadn't been challenged. They won't have that this year. I mean, their kind of schedule breaks out into a four-game stretch of the four weaker teams in the Mountain West. But, you know, those we're talking about Hawaii, Colorado State, Wyoming, and UNLV. Those are a lot better than playing Idaho and New Mexico State, who were probably the two worst teams in all of college football last year. So I think that's where you'll see the biggest difference is, you know, the cumulative effect of being challenged every week. And, you know, will they be able to stay healthy? Because they were, you know, relatively healthy all of last season. And that'll be the biggest challenge is can they every week, you know, keep, you know, play up to their capability?
Yeah, that's a big thing as well. Because like I said, you don't get that vacation for a whole month. Like, hey, we're playing New Mexico State, the Vandals of Idaho, all that type of stuff. Nothing like that. So they got to talent there. Well, before we get to talent, we know it's going to be upgraded, who they're playing and everything. But how does it work with the whole new coaching staff? Mike McIntyre's gone to Colorado. They're bringing Rob Carriger from San Diego. So we heard about it. He's from the area, from Belmar. And like, oh, he'll bring in some good recruiting, some good players, but he lost a couple of those guys during, at least when he first got in. How did people take that? Because it's a pretty, we know Jim Harbaugh made that big jump, but what do you guys, what is everybody talking about with him making that jump?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it's a big unknown. I mean, he comes in, you know, he says the right things. He looks like a guy that, you know, can do well here. He's repeatedly in recent weeks talked about, you know, long term and, you know, talked about this as a job he wants to be at. But, you know, every coach says that until $2 million is thrown in front of your face, like it was with McIntyre.
Correct.
So, I mean, you know, it's really a big unknown. I mean, until they get into the season and start playing games, you know, it's a young coaching staff. You know, the McIntyre staff, besides him, McIntyre was a first-time head coach. But, I mean, they had a defensive coordinator in Kent Bear who, you know, was a D coordinator at Stanford, at Notre Dame, at Washington, you know, as a guy that just had loads of experience. You know, they had a line coach with all of their coaches on last year's staff just had a ton of experience. This is a lot of young guys. I mean, a lot of guys that a couple NFL guys and Greg Lewis and Hank Fraley that just started coaching last year with Carriger at San Diego. Yeah, so a lot of these guys are in their first or second year as a Division I football coach, and you know they're enthusiastic and they're actually doing pretty well right now on the recruiting trail already with 12 verbal commits. But until you see them play games, it's going to be really hard to tell what they're going to do.
Yeah, and so you mentioned it's going to be really hard to tell what they're going to do. And you talk about, you know, Carriger coming in, you talk about all these new guys coming in, their first year, their second year coaching in Division I football or FBS football for that matter. So how is that going to change the style of offense on as opposed to how Mike McIntyre ran the offense, or are we still expecting to see very much kind of a multiple style offense from San Jose State?
Well, if you hear Ron Carragher talk, the offense is going to change to a West Coast offense. It's going to utilize tight ends. It's going to utilize fullbacks. And you're going to see David Fales under center. And to be honest, I don't know how much I believe that, just because they don't have tight ends. They don't have fullbacks. Those are the two positions on offense where they have nobody returning. They have about six tight ends on the roster that have a combined total of one catch at the FBS level.
Quality.
Their fullbacks are basically all freshmen, three of which have been converted from linebacker. So we're talking about these are positions that are important for this West Coast offense that Carragher wants to run, but he doesn't have the guys to do it this year. So I think this year you're probably going to see them go back to a lot of the same stuff that they ran last year. Now, it might still be Fales under center more, but I think you'll see them go out there with multiple different formations. They're going to have three and four receivers wide because that's what they're good at. They have four receivers. Their top four receivers are all back from last year. Plus, they've had a couple young guys that, due to some injuries in the spring, got some time and looked pretty good. So, I mean, receiver is a place they have depth, they have a good quarterback, and they don't have those tight ends and fullbacks. So I really don't think you can this year, until he recruits that kind of a team, I don't think he can switch to that West Coast offense doing that Stanford kind of stuff where you're running two and three tight ends in there.
You mean man some football?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, okay, so you did mention the fact that we might see Fales under center more. How does that improve his skill set? Obviously, not only for this season, but possibly for the NFL draft coming up.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, for the NFL, it's good to show that he can, run the offense from under center. He has done it a lot. I've talked to, you know, he's got a quarterback coach that has basically worked with him since he was in eighth grade, and he tells me that he's more comfortable under center. You know, if you can consider his time in high school, then Nevada, then junior college, a week spent in Wyoming, and now two different offices at San Jose State. He's learned and operate in a lot of different offenses, so he's done the under center stuff, and from what I'm told, he's very comfortable there. You know, he did do some under center last year, so I think he'll be fine in that. And of course, you know, that in the NFL, even though it's switching a little bit and you are seeing a lot more shotgun and stuff, they like to see quarterbacks that can do it all. And I think that will help his stock a little bit if he shows that he can still be successful by being under center.
Was that Wyoming thing something people knew before the media days? Like, I want to play – we knew Nevada. It was like, I want to play Wyoming and beat them. Was that something kind of known before this past 2 weeks or a week with media days?
I knew it. You know, he talked about it a little bit last year, you know. You know, of course, that was toward the beginning of last year when nobody knew who David Fales was. So when we wrote about it back then, nobody cared because he had played only a couple of games. And so I knew about it, but yeah, it hadn't been out there a ton. But you know, his dad is from Wyoming, lives in Wyoming, and so you know, his dad was kind of wanted him to come out there and check it out, and he did. But you know, David's a pretty smart kid. He knows what he. Obviously very good at figuring out what situations are the best for him. And, you know, that wasn't a good situation for him, so he decided to leave.
Was it because, like, their offense, because they did the more spread attack with Dave Christensen? They had Brett Smith, who's obviously very good as well. Was he, like, how was he at a junior college? Because he jumped around a little bit. Was he not highly regarded? Because he ended up at San Jose State, we know, not to disrespect, but they haven't been very good in a long time. Is it just because he ended up there because of scholarship, or was it more fit from Wyoming that wasn't the type of stuff he wanted to run and sit behind Brett Smith for the rest of his career?
Well, the main thing at Wyoming was he felt if they really wanted him, they would offer him a scholarship right there in 2011. They wanted him to walk on, and they said they would put him on scholarship in 2012. And, you know, his feeling was that, hey, if you really want me, you'll give me a scholarship now. And so by going back home to play at his local JC, he was going to get another year of starting. And then in terms of, you know, San Jose State, yeah, I mean, it was his only true scholarship offer. He did have an offer to go play at Indiana State, which, that's not too tough of a decision to decide to go to San Jose State over Indiana State. And, you know, it's about, you know, San Jose is about, you know, 35, 45 minutes away from where he grew up. And so it was a pretty easy call for him.
So I'm definitely going to, okay, so we know that Fails is fantastic. We know the wide receivers do their job and that our, you know, the running backs are, you know, okay for the most part. You lost one of the best offensive linemen in David Questenberry. How is this offensive line going to recuperate? Is it still going to be a strength of this year? Is Fails still going to be protected?
I mean, I think the big thing is, you know, they lost their best lineman, but they do return the other four guys. You know, their Nicholas Kaspar, their right guard, was a first team all whack guy. And, you know, they've got, you know, their other four guys on their line that they bring back were all pretty good. And, you know, they've got some guys that they're looking at left tackle. It still could change. They still could decide that one of those returning guys, they want to move them over to left tackle. They had some injuries during the spring, so they didn't get to evaluate the left tackle position as much as they would want. But, it's a big loss for sure. But I think for them, they're fortunate enough that that's the only loss they have on the line. They have the other four guys back. So if they can plug in a guy right there at the one position they lost, they hope to have the continuity with the rest of the guys and not miss out too much on losing Quisenberry.
And a follow-up to that, do you think we're going to see Fernando Villanueva, the three-star redshirt freshman, make his start this year?
Tough call. I mean, he wasn't really getting a lot of first-team reps during the spring. The guy that was getting the most looks was a sophomore out of Arizona, Wes Schweitzer. He was kind of the guy that was getting the most looks. There was another redshirt freshman, Evan Sarver. Villanueva, he's huge. You know, he's raw, but he's got size, and you know, you got to figure that at some point he's a guy they want to have in there, starting on that offensive line. They've got some older guys at the other positions. All the other guys are seniors, so you would think definitely going into 2014 that he'll be a big part. But I would expect him to at least be part of the rotation. They're going to want to get him worked in there and see what he can do.
They're returning four starters or four key guys from last year outside of Quisenberry. But let's kind of flip really quick to the defense, just kind of see. We know they got a pretty good secondary. I can never say his name. Was it Benay Ben Wilkire, I believe? Winokur?
Benay Ben Wickery.
Benay Ben Wickery. That's an awesome name. That's pretty sweet. Besides, we know what he can do. He's probably, like, the defensive backs in the whole Mountain West is amazingly good. Like, Darren Smith at Fresno, even Blair Burns at Wyoming didn't get first team, but he was a freshman All-American a couple years ago. So kind of what about this kind of defense in general? It's kind of, what are they, is it going to be able to somewhat keep up with that offense? Because we're expecting the offense to pretty much, in my opinion, be pretty close to last year.
Yeah, I mean, the defense, they've got five returning all-whack guys, four of them first teams. They've got Ben Wickery, Travis Presidi, who was an inside defensive tackle last year. He now moves to a defensive end in the 3-4, although he'll shift around. He'll play pretty much all three spots on that D-line. And they've got, you know, a couple linebackers and Keith Smith, who was a freshman All-American 3 years ago, and he's a three-year starter. And then Vince Buhager, he was a three-year starter at middle linebacker, but now moves into the outside linebacker. So they've got a lot of experience there. And, Buhager moving to the outside was basically made necessary because they've got a freshman that they're really high on, redshirt freshman Christian Tago, who he kind of looks like he's coming in as the next coming of Keith Smith. He was a guy that signed as an athlete, was a quarterback and a linebacker, and, you know, all last year was listed at the roster as quarterback linebacker. They still hadn't fully decided where they were going to go with him. And so, he'll be in there starting with Keith in the middle linebacker. And so they've got experience there, with four talented guys, and they're going to get a little bit of a boost, it looks like, as Anthony Larceval, who was expected to miss all season after having a pretty serious injury. He's expected to be back. I don't know how, what kind of strength he'll be at. But, I mean, they've got some experienced guys there on defense. And if their secondary holds up, then I think they should be pretty good.
And one of the things that seriously has impressed me from last year, and statistically looking, you mentioned a lot of guys returning back on defense this year. The defensive line, I mean, yeah, Travis Johnson's gone, and he had 21.5 tackles for losses and 13 sacks on his own. But you've got Residi and Larsaval both back, who combined for 23.5 tackles for losses and 15 sacks. And, I can only see this defensive line improving. Is that what you see as well?
Yeah, I mean, the defensive line was unique last year in that all four of their starting linemen were either first or second team all conference, which was pretty impressive. You know, they lose two of those, and we thought they were going to lose three if Larsaval hadn't come back. So with the move to the 3-4 and with Larsaval being a question mark, right now Residi is the only one we definitely know is going to be back, but you know, they've got a couple of guys looking at it, nose tackle. Falohi Vai is a really big body guy that they're not going to go with a true nose that they're going to expect to, you know, just really plug things up. They're going to be shifting around a lot. But, you know, he's a guy that he even had an interception last year in the UC Davis game. We'll see how these guys adjust to playing kind of different roles in this 3-4. But, you know, especially if Larsaval can come back and be anywhere close to the player he was last year, then I like what their defensive line can do. You know, and they were, you know, in the top 10 in the country in sacks last year.
Do you think that can maybe hold up with going to get up against some bigger Mountain West lines?
I think it'll probably, you know, I would think their sack total probably goes down a little bit. But, you know, they didn't blitz much last year. Kent Bear wasn't really a guy that's heavy on blitzing. He kind of likes to, you know, just send the regular pressure. And it seems like this year they may want to be a little more aggressive on defense. So I think it'll come down to what the outside linebackers can do with Buhajer. And they've got a JC transfer in Garrett Guanella, who is this like 6'5", 235 pounder. He's just tall, lanky. And I'm curious to see if he's been able to put on some weight in the offseason because he's a guy with a huge wingspan that if he could add a little more bulk that can give him a little more power on that pass rush, I think he'd be pretty good.
Okay, we're going to move the schedule just really quick. Who's really quick? One player like on either side of the ball who you think that we don't know about, similar to David DeFels last year, who could jump out and be maybe all-conference or second-team all-conference, somebody who would stand out who we're not expecting.
But I think, you know, Tyler Irvin, who's, you know, their running back, I don't know that he'll be a guy that's going to, you know, they say he's going to be the guy they're going to give the ball to, and I don't think he could probably handle, you know, a 20-25 carry load. But he's a guy, he's kind of a poor man's Reggie Bush. He's smallish, but he's quick. Very good kick returner. He was in the spring, he was working at punt returns, and so I think he'd like to be able to do both of those. And, you know, he's a good pass receiver. And so he's a guy that I think can kind of be this – you know, home run threat for them on offense and on special teams, and could be kind of an electric player.
Okay, that's good to know. Get those players people know about. Like, hey, I talked about him then or knew something about him. Those guys. So let's just jump to the schedule a couple games here. I've been kind of going over this a bit more for each team. They have a very nice schedule for the league. They get everybody, especially league games, everybody at home was difficult.
Yeah.
Fresno. You get Wyoming. I think they might be a little surprised. They'll be pretty good. San Diego State, Utah State. They got to go to Nevada. It's never easy, but Nevada may or may not be that great. So were you kind of shocked that they didn't get any more votes take away from Fresno for the media poll last week? I thought they might be – looking at it now, I would think they'd be closer just based off where they're playing and who they're playing, essentially.
Yeah, I didn't really expect them to get too many, you know, votes up there as a first or even second place team, just because – you know, the expectation, you know, they don't have a history. They don't have a history of success. They had one good season, and nobody's going to expect a team that had one good season to come into a tougher conference and go win the title. So that didn't surprise me. But when I did see the schedule, I mean, the immediate reaction is it was a favorable schedule. I mean, Utah State's an excellent team. You know, Fresno and San Diego, very excellent teams. And to get all three of those at home, you couldn't ask for more. The Nevada game on the road will be tough. They avoid Boise. I mean, the schedule couldn't have worked out much better for them. You know, I mean, they're tough toughest in terms of travel leg is when they go to Hawaii and then come back and go to Colorado State. But even with the travel, those are two games that, you know, they should win. I mean, Hawaii is a game I think they feel like they should be able to go over there and beat them. And they've beaten Colorado State the last 2 years, so I they're going to be confident in that game.
I'm looking right now, the game that I'm looking at, I'm circling September 7th at Stanford. And I know, you know, it's probably not going to end up as a win, but are we definitely keeping Stanford on upset alert? I mean, you guys came very, very close last year, shocked everybody, and that was kind of San Jose State's really coming out party. Is this the same thing that we're expecting to look at again this year?
I mean, my gut feeling tells me this game, Stanford probably wins it a little more easily, maybe by, you know, 10 or 14, maybe even more. I feel like last year Stanford probably was surprised. Plus, that was Stanford's first game. They were still going with Josh Nunez at quarterback, and, you know, he didn't work out very well for them. They hadn't switched over to Kevin Hogan yet. And so I think a lot of things kind of worked in San Jose State's favor. They feel like they kind of blew that game because they had a lot of uncharacteristic drops by their receivers. They dropped at least three or four passes that could have been big plays, one that could have been a touchdown. But I have a hard time imagining them being able to come up and sneak up on Stanford this year. Stanford, it's going to be such a tough game. It's such a physical game. They're lucky that they have a bye the week after. You know, I would think the chances of them beating them this year, just based on how well they played them last year, probably aren't very good. But, you know, if they can find a way to win that game, that really sets their season up pretty well.
And if they find a way to win, how would they find a way to win that game?
I mean, I think David Fales probably has to go off. I mean, he probably has to throw for, you know, 300 to 400 yards, four touchdowns, and they probably need, you know, a couple of turnovers early, something on special teams. Yeah, they're going to have to, you know, if it's just a game where Stanford lines up smash mouth football. They've got some physical players on defense, but nobody that can match up to what Stanford has. And so I they're going to have to get, you know, every break to go their way. They can't drop passes. They can't turn the ball over, and they have to force turnovers. It's going to be tough just because Stanford, after last year, I just got to feel like they come into that game saying there's no way we can let San Jose State hang with us this year.
Yeah, well, so I remember watching last year. I'm like, wait a minute, it's with a touchdown, 3 points. They're right there with them. I was on Pac-12 Network, so I don't think I could have seen it last year. Which this year, DirecTV, if they make a move, I'm there, but probably not.
Yeah, it's not looking very good.
Yeah, not. That's unfortunate because I'm looking forward to. I'll find another way. That's all. I'll figure out how to watch it. But with the rest of the schedule, kind of just a couple here in the Mountain West. Like we mentioned, they get everybody at home. I don't know if they can beat everybody because, like, we've already got through better competition, first-year coach, slightly new system perhaps on offense. What do you think kind of their chances are of heading – because the Fresno State game lines up perfectly. Last game of the year, if they can get by San Diego State, and I think they might be able to get by Utah State as well because I don't think whoever's going to win that side will be undefeated because I think Fresno may lose to Boise. But how much – what do you kind of think their chances are of maybe having that Fresno – game being maybe deciding that West division?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's yeah, right. I think the key games are going to be, you know, Utah State's had their number, beaten them four or five straight years. You know, this group of players has never beaten them, and Utah State really took it to them last year. They beat them up pretty good. So that one to me is going to be the first big test. They need to just kind of get over that hump. But even if they do lose that game, you know, the next four all look very winnable when you have Hawaii, Colorado State, Wyoming, and UNLV. And, you know, they beat San Diego State on the road last year. And so, you know, when you consider that, I mean, there's no reason they shouldn't be able to have a chance to beat them at home this year. So, I don't think there's any way they go into that Fresno State game undefeated in conference play. But like you said, with Fresno having to play Boise, if Fresno can lose a game, I don't think you're going to see two undefeated teams coming into that one. So if you got them already at one loss, if both are already at one loss, there's a chance that it can mean something. But you know, it'll depend on, you know, how they can navigate that end of that schedule, because those last four teams they play are all teams that were in bowl games last year, and that's going to be a grind for them.
Do you give them a good chance to represent the West Division? Like, what are your what do you kind of put their percentage? And it's super early, but how comfortable are you with them being in that title game, perhaps?
I mean, I would, you know, probably in the 40 to 50% range. I mean, I'd give them a fighting chance. You know, they surprised me last year. You know, I thought last year they probably were capable of being a bowl team. I had them pegged at about a 7-5, and so I mean, they surprised me. I kind of looked at their season and thought they could. I thought they could maybe be 8-4. I thought they could get into their final two games being 8-2, and then I expected them to lose to BYU and Louisiana Tech. You know, and they surprised me by winning those two games. So, you know, at this point, I guess I can't be surprised if they do, you know, run the table up until Fresno, or maybe only drop one game and go in there. I mean, it's not something I expect, but you know, I guess I can't let myself be too surprised this year based on what they did last season.
All right, so okay, I'm gonna pick at your brain here because obviously you're a columnist for the San Jose State Mercury or San Jose Mercury News, correct?
Yeah.
So you've been getting commenters, or at least I think you've been getting commenters, and you've been getting San Jose State fans. Are these new, recently found San Jose State fans, are they more bandwagon-y, or are these like the fans who hid for a while, followed Stanford or Cal, and then now that the team is successful, they're coming back, or are these just kind of like out of the blue?
You know, I don't think there are any casual San Jose State fans. There's that small hardcore group, you know, and then you've got, you know, basically you've got your small hardcore group that, you know, followed him thick and thin through everything, through, you know, talks of disbanding football and all that. Yeah, you saw last year as they were winning, it kind of, you know, there's a ton of San Jose State alumni in this area, so they're a program that it always felt like if they could do something would be able to generate some interest. And so, you know, I think you pulled in a little bit of that alumni base that had kind of ignored the football team for so long. But, yeah, they're not picking up any casual fans that are just saying, hey, let me hop on that bandwagon. The bandwagon's still pretty small.
Do they have – you think with their kind of along the same lines, they got a good home – like I said, got the good home slate. Do you think they might actually – the only game I kind of watched last year because I do some stuff with BYU working stuff with them, but I was watching that game more particular than others. How would they see – because that game, I'm pretty sure it's a lot of BYU fans there. Will they have a decent crowd size with being good 1 year, new league, new teams, better teams coming into play? Do you think they may get a few extra thousand people to show up just, hey, we're playing San Diego State. They should be pretty good. Or Fresno, they're – couple hours away or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think those games in particular, you know, those rivalry type games, you know, down the stretch, they should get some good crowds. You know, the San Diego State people will come up from San Diego. Fresno usually sends a good crowd. That should be a nice crowd. The Navy game, just because the Naval Academy always travels well and always gets their fans there. Those games should be big, but, you know, even, it's a good thing they scheduled homecoming for the Wyoming game. Otherwise, you probably have about 5,000 there.
Yeah, the Pokes, good team. Well, yeah, it's good. You got to schedule wins and schedule a team. Hopefully you have some festivities going on to get people there. One last thing really quick, not San Jose State related, but it's with the title game. I thought Craig Thompson would have made some big announcement because that's the thing you want to do at media days, make some big announcement. He said a little bit about losing the Armed Forces Bowl, but nothing about the title game. Do you have any information about that, or where do you think they'll eventually land up? Because I'm hoping ultimate pie in the sky is like after the SEC title game at CBS, but I don't really know. What do you kind of think could happen, or do you have any information that might, you know, something we don't know yet?
Yeah, you know, I don't know for sure. I know, you know, a couple of coaches did reference the fact that it was going to be there. So I think it seems like that is the thinking and that's the hope of it. You know, I one of the coaches I talked to, you know, specifically talked about, hey, we've got this great slot right after the SEC title game. So maybe he knew something that he wasn't supposed to reveal yet. But, you know, yeah, I know he kind of left the door open that that's what they were looking at, but nothing was official. And you know, so hopefully that's what it is. You know, I know he spoke about how great that would be to kind of be that last time slot on that Saturday and be the last bit of regular season football. And you know, it'd be great to get some eyes on the conference. So hopefully that is what ends up happening.
Yeah, that's what I hope for, because you play before it's super early, 10 or 9 o'clock, depending where it's at. But afterwards, you got – there are some other games like ACC, Big Ten, or not Fox, but Pac-12 are going on. But that's my ultimate. I still want it on CBS Sportsnet, 5 Eastern on Saturday. I'm like, knowing the league, I wouldn't really be shocked if that happened for stuff that they've done in the past couple of years. But if it's post-SEC, that would be the best thing ever. So, but I guess I'll wait and see, because you got to expect something in a couple – what, 2 weeks before the season? It's like, make a move, do something. But yeah, that's where we're going to end the show right there. Is kind of ask about that if you knew anything about it. All I knew was kind of CBS with that Craig Thompson saying negotiating thing. But I just want to, yeah, just thank you, Jimmy, for coming on, talking everything San Jose State. Give us some names to know, what to expect, what they're going to do on offense, defense, basically everything, because I'm still kind of learning about what they're going on. So just thanks for hanging out with us for about half an hour, and hope training camp starts Friday. Is that right, this week?
Starts tomorrow. On Thursday.
All right, Thursday. So, yeah, stay tuned for his stuff and Wall stuff as well. And just thanks for joining us, man.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, and one more time, that was Jimmy Durkin from the San Jose Mercury News. Excellent stuff. Got to know about their, as you mentioned, their great offensive line, which I was kind of surprised about because I didn't do enough research on it, but it's going to be a stellar line to block. Can they block DeMarcus Lawrence maybe? But they don't play him, so it doesn't matter. So we can answer that.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter.
Yes, that's a yes. Yes.
I can actually. He's actually actively root for San Jose State because they do not play Boise State this year.
Unless they make the title game.
Unless they make the title game. You're absolutely right. You know, Jimmy said that there's not too much, there's not too many San Jose State fans. I disagree. There has been some small slap fighting going on between the Spartan fans and the Utah State fans on our site. As me who spends hours reading the site, I've kind of enjoyed it. So Spartan fans, just keep on plugging. Yes. Don't worry, Aggie fans, we're going to get to you soon.
Yeah, we will. I will try to work my connection to get Utah State expert on the show. I think of the right word. I'm sorry. I was like, I'm doing my Jim Rome impression. And I will. I need a piece of paper to crumple. Hold on. Email time.
Jazz hands.
I don't think he does that. I don't think he does that anymore. I've listened to him a while, but I don't think he does the paper crumple thing for email. But basically, the one cool thing, too, I was interested about learning their offense. They are going to try to do West Coast, go under center more. I don't think Ron Carragher, he's going to be dumb and change overnight. It's like when Brady Hoke went to San Diego State. He wanted, and he had Al Borges back there, the OC. They're not going to change what they're doing under, who's their coach before, the guy from Oklahoma? Terrible head coach, San Diego State. Whatever it was. They want to change systems. He's like, we're going to gradually implement, say, first year 20%, next year, whatever, to fit your needs. Because it's not like same thing with Chip Kelly to the Eagles. He's not going to do a zone read option with Nick Foles at quarterback. Like, he's got to be not a smart person to do that. So I would expect, as Jimmy mentioned to us, that like they'll implement it. He still may be under center more, but it's still going to be a fairly similar offense last year, just a few tweaks, because they got no fullbacks. They got no tight ends, essentially, with experience.
Yeah, I mean, you've taken the words out of my mouth, damn it.
Yes, brilliant. Winner.
You win tonight.
Awesome.
Curses! That's okay. I got to mess up your website while you're gone.
Don't tell people that. But let's move on real quick. Let's go through our, because we didn't want to keep them on too long because we didn't want to do an hour show. Well, it could still be kind of long, but not with our guest. The schedule. We didn't want to go game by game. We mentioned Stanford, which if you all listening at this point, thank you. Jimmy thinks they're going to take Stanford, or Stanford's going to take the Spartans more seriously and be a 10 to 14 point win for them, perhaps right about that range, and it take almost a miracle, play perfect football, turnovers, all that good stuff, where if you play 100%, you'll have a chance to win even against a top 10 team like Stanford. However, you and me, we didn't get our predictions. I assume him, my gut feeling with him, I didn't want to put him on the spot for a win total, because it's fun to do, but whatever.
He's a professional.
Well, not even that. I could safely say he gets paid a few more dollars than I did to do this. Same thing, similar thing. But my opinion, he thinks you're going to get a title game. What do you if we'd asked him that, do you think he'd have been like 9 wins? I think safe to say 9 wins is where he's leaning, perhaps.
I don't know. I'm looking at the schedule now. I see one.
About time.
Two, three. Hey, I was looking at the schedule before.
Kidding. You had to know which Stanford played.
Six. You know what? I totally see 9 wins.
I could see
10
more.
Or 11. I could see 10 or 11 in there as well.
Because I could see Stanford, I'm going to chuck in as a loss, but it wouldn't be an out of this world shock if they were to beat Stanford. It'd be a pretty big win, obviously. Probably their biggest in school history, assuming Stanford ranked in the top 10 in week two, which...
Been at Minnesota.
Please. 7-time national title, Minnesota, if you recall their... front of
that was before pre-World War II.
Hey, they still were granted that. How many titles do Alabama fans fight over?
A million?
I'm just saying. There's them off against whoever, War Eagle, Auburn fans, or whoever's in the SEC. They contradict or claim to fame for every national title out there. But I just like to mention that. 7-time national title. Former national title. But
no, I think they can ease. It's something that they can totally win that game, no problem. Even though it's third week in the season and Minnesota would probably have their feet wet by then.
Yeah,
but this team would not surprise me if they went 11-1.
Just only lost to Stanford,
and the only loss would be to Stanford.
I don't know.
Because remember that they do get Fresno State at home.
Well, they get everybody at home. They get everybody at home. Fresno.
No, they don't get Nevada at home.
Well, come on. Do you? Sorry. That should have come off as so rudely to Nevada fans there.
No, sorry, it Keegan. Should. It should.
I just like their offense. I just think Cody Fajardo's awesome and does good stuff there. But if we're going to be realistic, we know Nevada playing at Reno, huge home field advantage. But look at the schedule. They get all the teams that are in serious contention. At home, Utah State, San Diego State, Fresno State. They get Navy at home, and that's a huge cross-country thing for them, where Navy, they're not as good as they were a couple years ago, but they're still a good team, got the quirky offense. The only problem is it's on one day less rest. They play Nevada, and then they play Navy on Friday, the following Friday, Saturday to Friday. And so that's a little bit there. But they get everybody at home. I don't think they'll go 11-1 because, like Jimmy said, they haven't beaten Utah State in what I think he said 4 or 5 years. And Utah State has Tricky Keaton, and they, according to our top 50 list by our panel of experts, I will say our panel of experts, yes.
Experts?
Our panel of knowledgeable fans, whatever, are people who are voting. 6 different people, so it's not, and there's no Utah State person on the roster. I may know them a little bit better than most others since I'm in the area and kind of follow them a bit. Just not saying I do, but. Just because I'm kind of there. There's word about them and whatever. I'm talking too long and rambling about nothing. However, they have probably the best linebacking core in the league, perhaps. They're, you know what I mean? They're up there with San Jose State's going to be a good linebacking core. San Diego State, I'm assuming Boise will be pretty good as well. But that's going to be a tough matchup there. If they can protect David Fells, the offensive line, they will hold their own. I don't know. They beat San Diego State last year. Fresno, it's... I don't know, because I can see them losing all those games or winning all of them, but I'm thinking, I'm going to say 9 or 10 wins is where I'm going to kind of put them at. Loss to Stanford for certain, well, 95% they're going to lose that game. But then you have, then you're going to split some sort of fashion between Utah State, San Diego State, Fresno, and Nevada. I think if they're going to go to the title game, they got to get a minimum 2-2. But I think they really need to go 3-1.
Look, okay, so if you really – I see this as a 9-win team. I see them going 9-3, and I'm giving it a 67% chance that Stanford's going to win that game.
Okay.
But I'm definitely swinging it the other way. I'm going to see – it's going to be about 80% chance that San Jose State's going to win at Minnesota. So I'm going to say that the losses will be to Stanford, to Utah State, and to Fresno State. I can see this a solid second-place finish. However, if Fresno State happens to, you know, screw up one game, I could totally see them overtaking that spot at first and making the title game.
Okay. Make a lot of sense. Yeah, I could see them losing to those two schools there and being right on the cusp of that. So if we're going to – is there any game on there that you think that could just come up out of nowhere and get them for a loss? And they don't count Nevada or Navy in that category.
No. Yeah, actually.
Which team?
You're going to laugh at me.
Rams?
No, UNLV.
I'm trying to withhold my restraint of laughter. Yeah, but
why? No, UNLV is a perfect trap game.
Why is that?
So you get Wyoming at home, right? Should be no big of deal.
Wyoming's tougher than UNLV by quite a margin.
Exactly. And then the week after UNLV, you get San Diego State, and they're going to be at home, and obviously they're going to be a tough team in division. Yeah, exactly. They're a sandwich team. They're a team that could possibly be looked over. And, you know, obviously...
Are you being that optimistic by saying possibly be looked over?
Yeah.
Sorry, Jacob, but it's kind of true.
No, UNLV's looked over by everybody, almost everybody. Sorry. Yeah, you know, that's where UNLV likes to strike. If they strike.
They got to start the engine, first of all, man. They got to get out of the driveway. No, they have some good play. Tim Cornett, Nick Sherry should be improved, but we'll see the win total. But that's a game. I thought you were going to mention Colorado State because it's on the road. Got to come back from Hawaii. Long trip. They get a bye week after. I'm kind of thinking of that because we didn't touch on this at the beginning, but did you see the Mountain West odds that I think it's Bodava put out? What's it called? It used to be Bodog. It's
Bovado.
Bovado. If you notice, Hawaii... They play Hawaii, so the Hawaii was not the worst team. How do you go by the odds? Because CSU was 12-1 in their division. How is that possible? Better than Air Force and Wyoming, and miles ahead of New Mexico at 40-1. That's where I kind of thought you might lean towards CSU.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much weight to put in those odds.
Partially, I agree with you too because we may talk about this in another or live video show later, but. Hawaii is 40-1 to win the league, same as Air Force, same as Wyoming, but New Mexico is 100-1, and I feel New Mexico is much better than Wyoming.
Yeah. So anyway, we're getting way off.
Topic. I just wanted to mention that because I had stories I may have thought of CSU because you assume people in Vegas know what they're doing. They make a living and want people to get wagers on both sides, but those don't make sense. Hawaii, unless they know something about Taylor Graham or something, we haven't heard anything about. But let's just kind of wrap up there. We've gone probably a while for the show, but we want to, again, thank Jimmy Durk and check him out on
San Jose Mercury News.
Mercury News, and I had his Twitter up here. Let me actually get that. I think it's Jimmy_Durkin on Twitter. If you like the 49ers, he does some of stuff with him as well. So call Nevada fans for Colin Kaepernick.
Nevada, exactly.
Check out that. Sure, we'll mention that, I guess. Also one other thing. Former San Jose State star Travis Johnson just has a shot with the 49ers he wrote about earlier. So kind of a couple guys for Mountain West Ties kind of check out the Niners. But that's all we got tonight. And this show's going up a few days earlier than normal. It's going to go up on Thursday instead of Sunday because, as Chris mentioned, I will be MIA for a week. So hopefully the site does not burn down in my absence. And next show...
Hi, everybody!
Yes, Chris will be the man in charge. But next week we will be discussing all things UNLV football and... Try to put a smiley face on the Rebels 2013 season. And once again, everybody, thanks for tuning in, listening to us, and check out mwcconnection.com.